come along with us as we explore the broad world of preservation and the work being done to preserve, interpret, and save our past in a 21st century world. From aquaculture to historic foodways to forensic modeling, we're talking weekly with experts from across the globe. This is your host, Nick Redding. Welcome to PreserveCast. This is Nick Redding, and you're listening to PreserveCast, and today we're thrilled to have in studio with us Angela Crenshaw, who is the director of the Maryland Park Service and has been doing amazing work in her entire career with the Maryland Park Service. But we're going to be talking about the work that she's doing now, leading this important agency, this that safeguards so many important resources here in the state of Maryland, both cultural and natural. But before we get there, we love to get to know people, and we love to get to know what brought them into the line of work that they're engaged in. So, Angela, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up, and how did you get involved in this kind of work, and what led you to becoming the director of this important agency?
That is an excellent question. So I was born in West Virginia, and then my family moved to Baltimore when I was about 4 or 5 years old. And I tell people I tripped and fell into the natural resources. I used to love walking around in the woods and playing in creeks and streams. It was second nature to me. I always felt comfortable in the woods. And I intended to be an environmental lawyer. So I went to Washington College, and then I went to UDell to get my master's with the hopes of then passing the LSATs and becoming a lawyer. But I started working for the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, removing abandoned boats and debris. And doing that, I got to work with many parks because parks have boat ramps, and we have a few marinas at the time, and we worked with the Maryland Natural Resources Police, and I recall seeing some ranger school graduates coming up, and I was like, I want to go to ranger school. I think I'd get some wonderful skills. And my supervisor was like, but you're not a park ranger. And I said, you're correct. And so I saw a post for park rangers, and I was like, well, I'll apply. And I remember interviewing, and I knew most of the people on the panel because I'd worked at the department, and a little while later they gave me a call, and I started at Elk Neck, and it's been absolutely life-changing.
It's so interesting how people kind of get into these things and what diversity is there is in the way that people get into the things that they do. And you said you're kind of like fell into this sort of thing. But what about like growing up? Was there an ethic of nature? Was there an ethic of history? Like, a lot of times we hear from people about, well, my parents dragged me to this, and then I just sort of begrudgingly fell in love with it or something. Like, is there that part of your story as well? And what kind of a West Virginia experience? Because people hear that where we have listeners all across the country. Was it like country West Virginia? Was it city West Virginia? Because it is a diverse place as well.
So I was born just outside of Charleston, Dunbar, and I recall the hills of West Virginia. I recall smoke from smokestacks and railroad trestle bridges. And so whenever I'm in a town like Harper's Ferry, I love those trestle bridges. I just feel comfortable and at home. And my parents would take me to historic sites. They wouldn't have to drag me. I'd go willingly, no begrudging here. So we would fly kites at Fort McHenry and have a picnic and then learn about that history. And there's a few other places we would go to as well. So history was always there. And as a Girl Scout, we would go to a number of historic locations. And the thing I remember about Girl Scouts is they say, always leave a place cleaner than when you found it, and they'll always invite you back. And that has stuck with me. Like, I don't leave a mess anywhere that I go. I make sure it's clean and everything looks good, better than when I got there. And so that kind of sticks with me. And I feel that way about sharing history as well. And I think especially African-American history has been so misunderstood. We were having a great conversation about history before we started this interview. And in my mind, when I learned about American slavery and Harriet Tubman, she flew, she wore a cape, she was Superwoman, you know? And she was just a regular African-American woman from the Eastern Shore. So I love sharing that aspect of her with people. And I love sharing the skills that her and her father possessed. I think a lot of people think American slavery didn't involve any skills, but plantations were small cities, and guess who was running those small cities? So I love sharing the skills that people had to learn to maintain and to live with other people, and it's just a different aspect of history. And I love sharing my comfort in nature. I think a lot of folks are uncomfortable in nature for various reasons, but I just feel good under some trees and sitting on rocks. And so I love sharing that aspect too. And our Maryland state parks allow you to do that safely, comfortably. So history, recreation, culture, we offer all of that. So this is kind of a natural fit for me.
Yeah, I think people are getting that loud and clear that it's a good, you're in the right place right now.
Thank you.
And it was a perfect segue. It's almost like you're a public interpreter, like you know how to tell stories really well. Because prior to becoming the director, you don't just join the Park Service and become the director. I understand there's steps in between.
Thank goodness.
And so you've had the opportunity to work at a bunch of different parks. Maybe take us through some of those, and then, you know, not burying the lead here, but you ended up at Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad State Park, and were there at a really pivotal moment in that state park's history. But before we get there, and we're going to talk all about Harriet Tubman, where did your Park Service career take you? Because we found you at the beginning of it, and now we've met you when you're director. So where were you in between there?
I started at Elk Neck State Park up in Northeast Maryland in Cecil County, and that was the perfect place to start. It has recreation and history and a campground and hunting and just everything that a park could have. So I learned about running and managing a campground and everything that comes with that. We had a boat ramp. We have a wading beach at Elk Neck. And we also had Turkey Point Lighthouse, which is a beacon of light, but it was also a beacon of light for those seeking freedom. It was used on the Underground Railroad. You knew when you saw Turkey Point to bear to the right if you were heading to one location, but you could also bear to the left and take the Susquehanna and Tidewater Canal. So I loved learning about Turkey Point. And it's the third highest lighthouse of the bay, and it had the most female keepers of the light, 4 total of any other lighthouse in Maryland. And that was an amazing piece of history to learn and to share with people. And I just found so much inspiration in that. And Elk Neck is beautiful. It's on a peninsula. There's water on 3 sides of you, which makes it difficult to get lost, which I appreciate. You just look up and you walk to some water to figure out where you are. So that was a lovely introduction to the Park Service for me. And then I was at Gunpowder as their lead for a little while. Then I transferred to Harriet Tubman. Helped open that park and establish the standard operating procedures and get us across the finish line for opening. And our grand opening was an amazing celebration of Miss Tubman and her life. And then being able to share her life and legacy with so many people. I think it's completely missed by a lot of folks that she was born in Maryland. So I love sharing that. The park can be considered to be in the middle of nowhere, but it's 5 miles from where she was born and very close to where she spent her childhood. So to me, you're in Tubman country. And if you're going to learn about her, you have to come to South Dorchester County. And so that was very meaningful for me. When I moved there, I didn't have internet. I didn't have cable. So I just read a lot of books and walked around outside and explored and found my own personal connection to Harriet Tubman that I could then share with other people directly.
Well, it's the perfect place to not have cable or internet because there's a lot of outdoor activities.
So many, yeah.
And you're right. I mean, what an amazing opening event. I was there. You were mobbed by people, so we probably never saw each other. But talk about a powerful experience. And you're right. I mean, I try to be an ambassador for Maryland wherever I go, and I always talk about who I think are our 2 most famous Marylanders, Frederick Douglass
and Harriet Tubman. Correct.
Because, you know, if you travel across the world and ask them, some Americans they know, they may mention one of those two.
Easy. And they're Marylanders.
And what better examples of sort of American grit and tenacity and perseverance.
Lives well lived.
I mean,
100%.
Both of them. Mm-hmm. You know, you could spend your entire life just talking about
one or the other. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You'd need 2 lifetimes. Talk to people for those, because we've done one with Kate Larson on just Harriet Tubman.
I'm her biggest fan.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So we've done a lot of just, well, not a lot, but we've done one where we went in depth on Harriet Tubman. Mm. But for people who aren't familiar with the site, what might they experience when they come there? Because we have listeners not only across the country, but across the world. So if people are coming to Maryland, you said it's sort of in the middle of nowhere. It's on the eastern shore of Maryland. So you got to cross that big bridge or come down the peninsula. But it's south of Cambridge. And what will you find as a visitor experience at a place like Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad State Park?
So first off, I'd like to invite anyone and everyone to visit Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad State Park in Church Creek, Maryland. And it is 20 minutes, 30 minutes south of Cambridge, and it's meant to be a full body experience. So you pull off the highway and you make a right or a left and you drive on gravel. So that makes you change the way you drive and you hear it under your wheels, and then you park and then you walk and you can feel that gravel on your feet. And then you face the visitor center, and it's beautiful. There's a building that's lined in cedar and another one that is lined in a smoother light blue material. Those are probably the images most people see. And the whole design plan is the view north. So you enter the visitor center, the park in the south, and then you travel north. You enter the visitor center in the south, and then you begin your experience. And when you're done, you're in the north, which represents freedom. It's very bright and very open. And then you look south, and it is dark and enclosed. And that's on purpose, because the north represented freedom during American slavery, and the south represented slavery. It was dark and impeding. And you can learn about Tubman's early years spent in Maryland. You learn about her family and her father, who taught her the skills necessary to become a successful conductor on the Underground Railroad. You learn about her childhood, which was a childhood spent in American slavery, which wasn't really a childhood at all. And then the final section is all about the Underground Railroad and her journeys to freedom. And you can see a list of everyone she emancipated. And you can learn about some of her larger emancipation journeys. And then you learn about her time in South Carolina on the Combahee River Raid. And then there's, you can walk around our legacy garden. And as an outdoorsy person, the natural side of that is most important to me. I think Dorchester County sunsets are some of the most beautiful you can experience. So since the park is on a north-south orientation, you can easily turn to the left and watch the sunset, or to the right and watch it rise. You can see the landscape that is there. You can look at all the plants we have in our garden. And then you can do part of the Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad Byway and learn a little bit more about her life. You can visit local churches. You can visit Cambridge, and you can visit other sites that were important to her. So that park is meant to be your overview of her life. And then you can go find what means a little bit more to you, and you can explore that. You can do it a day, a weekend, 3 to 5 days. It's really up to you. But I love the education and the hands-on learning that we offer there.
I think one of the things that's so interesting, and for people around the country who are like practitioners in this work and trying to interpret a story similar to Harriet's, there's no comparison really, probably, but different stories where some of the physical resources or remains are no longer extant. I think it does an amazing job of weaving. People a lot of times talk about, oh, the landscape can tell stories, or the landscape can speak, and then they kind of just leave it at that. And they're like, yeah, well, go listen to it, you know. And I think that one of the amazing things that I've really only ever seen done on the level that it's done at Tubman is allowing the landscape to speak and encouraging people to see the landscape for what it is. The canal, I'm thinking of.
The canal, yep.
Places like that where it's powerfully evocative. I don't know what other word to use for it.
Emotive, evocative.
Emotive, and it does tell stories. And I think that they have done an amazing job there. So for people who are in the field and are interpreting places and difficult history and particularly places where perhaps, you know, like Harriet's cabin no longer stands. We don't have that thing to send people to. There are places on the byway, like you said, that are still associated with her life, but there's pieces that are missing. But it doesn't seem like the story lacks because of that. Like the landscape still is able to tell that story, and the landscape was such an important part of her story.
It was huge, and we're assisted by Blackwater National Wildlife Refuge. They're over 20,000 acres, and they surround the visitor center, so there'll never be any growth around there. It will always be that beautiful view. And what I love about the the timber fields there and the depth of the trees. Back in Tubman's time, folks would look into the woods and think there were big walls because it was so dark when you looked into the woods. And I remember saying that to people. Then we'd walk into the woods and it'd be darker and it'd be much cooler during the summer, which is a respite from the sun down there and from the bugs and the other critters that walk around. So it's amazing to actually be able to feel that landscape. And when I moved there, I would invite friends and family, and I'm like, it's where water and land meet. And they're like, the beach? And I'm like, absolutely not. It's very swampy. It's very tenuous. One minute you're on solid ground, and next thing you know, your ankle is in mush and mud. And that's what she experienced. And that's also a part of her story. When I tell people, when you ran away from American slavery, that's what you look like. You were covered in mud. You were filthy. You probably stunk. You were sweating. You were very uncomfortable. So if you came into a city like Wilmington or Philadelphia looking exactly like what you were basically a mark. And so it's very important to have assistance from folks on the Underground Railroad that can give you a bath and clean clothes and decent shoes so you really didn't look like you just spent the last 3-4 days a week in the woods. That was pivotal to telling her story too.
And I think that a place, I mean, obviously you're passionate about this and you have just some innate skills in being a storyteller, but having to use a landscape to tell a story versus a specific object or a place, it has made you just a really powerful speaker and a storyteller. And that comes across, I know, before we click the mics on, this is like, we have like the pre-show conversation. You're talking about, you know, how your interpretive sort of theories and the way that you get people to engage and questions and answers. And, you know, I think it set you up well for the position that you're in now, where you have to tell this story not only for your employees, but also for the general public about not only why these places matter, but why they should be funded and how, you know, we take care of them and developing an ethic, not just for visitors to one park and to one campground, but for an entire system.
Over 90 units.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing. Really exciting to have an interpreter in that role.
Thank you.
You know, because people who lead park systems sometimes come from different backgrounds and they're all, you know, important and good backgrounds. But from the history side, I think we're really proud to have what we consider like one of our own running this, who is so passionate about this and with a system that has such an amazing diversity of resources. So as we mentioned, you've been promoted to the Maryland Park Services Director last fall. What does that mean? And where is this work taking you? Like, what are the priorities? What are you working on? If people are curious, like, what is it that the director does other than sit down on random podcasts? What is it that you do from day to day? And where is this work taking you? Where are you hoping to take the service?
It varies, and that's why I love this job. There is no normal day. If you look at my schedule, it can be meetings, it can be park visits, it can be work groups. We have the Great Maryland Outdoors Act to implement, and that created two historical parks, Freeman State Historical Park and Port of Deposit. And those will require and do require a lot of my energy and a lot of my attention. So it's an honor to create two new parks and tell some amazing stories. But we also have a number of positions we need to hire and fill. So part of my job is making sure people know we are hiring, what it takes to be a state employee, how you apply, and what we're looking for in the Maryland Park Service. And just spreading the good news of Maryland State Parks. I think there's a few parks everyone thinks of, Sandy Point, an Assateague, maybe a Deep Creek, and those are wonderful, stunning places. But we have a lot of other spots in between that people could visit. And over the pandemic, our visitation more than doubled. It skyrocketed. So we're trying to make sure there are places that people can go to be outside, whether you want to hike or learn history or just have a picnic or just a quiet place to be. So spreading the good news of the Maryland Park Service is a big part of what I do. Recruiting, planning for the future, and working with wonderful partners like Preservation Maryland and other groups to make sure we do what we do and we do it right.
Yeah, it's a huge job. It could take you in so many different directions. You mentioned two things, though, that I want to follow up on.
Sure.
Maybe first, the lower hanging fruit here. What are you looking for? You said, we want to make sure people know how to apply and what are we looking for? So someone's listening and they're like, wait, I want to be like her when I grow up. What are they looking for? So either, you know, maybe they're young and listening to this and are thinking about a career, or maybe they're ready for the, you know, the second act in their story, and they are thinking about maybe applying. What is it that you're looking for? What kind of jobs are you trying to fill?
We have a ton of different jobs. We have maintenance positions, ranger positions, administrative positions, support positions, planners. As you can imagine, creating new Maryland state parks, each one has to have a plan. We have to figure out where we're going and how we're telling these stories. And we're just interested in having passionate, kind, thoughtful people. These are resources that the state values. And so they don't belong to me, they belong to everyone. So I want to make sure we take care of them for the future. We tell their stories, we preserve them. So people that are passionate, people that are caring, and you have to be able to multitask. You have to be able to have three or four projects going in your mind, answer questions, be thoughtful, be helpful. There's an emergency response aspect of it, and it does help to be organized, having a lot of things going on. But if you're unorganized, that's fine. We just welcome new people from all backgrounds to help us tell all of these stories.
And you have a host of different places where they can work, like you were saying. I mean, there you go from beach to mountain and everything in between. So, you know, if America is, or rather Maryland is America in miniature, then the state park system is like the National Park Service in miniature. I mean,
exactly.
We've got, you know, historical resources, beaches,
battlefields, rail trails, islands, beaches, lakes, mountain cabins, mountain trails, fishing, a little bit of everything. So if you have an interest in any of those things or preserving the natural, cultural, and historical resources of the state, we'd be more than happy to have you.
So we'll put a link in our show notes for where you can learn more about current positions that are available and how to get in touch with folks in the Maryland Park Service who are currently recruiting, because we would love for people to make that connection.
Yeah, all are welcome, of course.
Yeah, you can list us as the reference, PreserveCast. I heard it on PreserveCast. But you mentioned, you know, oh, we've got all these different places, all these different resources, and you're adding more. So that was one that I wanted to talk to you about, Freedman's State Historical Park. So people are probably familiar, like we were talking about Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad State Park. But now you're having the opportunity in a slightly different position to lead a new park coming online. Tell people what Freedman's is, because Freedman's State Historical Park is unique in its own way. I mean, like, here again, Maryland Park Service, sort of at the cutting edge of history and preservation. I don't know of another one like this. There may be others, but this one is really special and it certainly is a first for the state of Maryland. So tell us a little bit about it and where this is and the story it's going to preserve.
So Freedman State Historical Park is currently a part of Patuxent River State Park. And what I love about it is it's about an hour from the nation's capital, but when you're there, you don't hear anything. It is peaceful. It is quiet. There are rolling green hills. And it tells the story of Enoch George Howard and his family. So Enoch George Howard was born into American slavery, and he was able to save up enough money to emancipate himself and his wife and their four children. Then they had a fifth born free, which is amazing. He purchased the home of his wife's enslaver, and that's also what we're interpreting. And then after he passed, he deeded some land for a school and a church. So he basically changed that whole landscape for African Americans. It gave them a place to be safe. It gave them a place to worship, and it gave them a place to learn and get an education. And the other building that we're interpreting is that of his son, Greenberry. That is the most well-preserved building there. So you can park, and then you can hike in, and you can see Greenberry's house. You can learn about their family burial location. And what I love most is they understood the landscape. They understood the natural world and how to farm it and how to use it to their benefit. And I love sharing that story because it is so full and it's all encompassed in this location along the Patuxent River. And it's just very fulfilling to share. Everyone that I take there is just beyond moved. I usually call it about a day trip. If you get there at 10 and we do introductions and then we hike in and we see the historic structures, which were which are beautiful to see, and they all have their own little personality, but they tell the personality and the history of that family too. And then we do a little ceremony at the family burial ground to honor those that came before us. And then we usually do a little closing ceremony and have a discussion about what we saw and what we learned, and we can unpack it. And it's, I love the connection to Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad State Park, but Tubman's focus is mainly the visitor center. It's mainly inside. Here at Freedman State Historical Park, we are outside. We are in the elements. It's rained while I've been there. It's gotten windy. We've seen fox run by. We've seen turkey. And so being able to use that natural landscape to connect people to our history and also to a not well-known history has been amazing and moving. And I'm really looking forward to the next steps in that park.
Yeah, I mean, it comes across, and as I said before, didn't even plan it this way, but your understanding of landscapes is important, right? I mean, particularly
necessary
in the kind of work that you're in, but in a place like that, and I've had the good fortune of going out there, and we're participating and partnering on some of the work that's going to happen out there, and you're right, you do forget where you are. Part of it is one of the most urbanized counties in the state, and then you're now just sort of lost out.
You could get lost easily.
You could get lost at that site. It's not a peninsula.
It's not.
No. So, and is an amazing location. And you've talked in a couple different places, and maybe give you the chance to talk about this too, about getting people engaged in the story and feeling comfortable to ask questions and just be in a place. And I know you've done some really great work with an organization that is near and dear to your heart, which is Afro Outdoors.
Outdoor Afro.
Mm-hmm. Outdoor Afro, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I flipped it around there. Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about that, because I think that that's not only important for the conversations we're having about these different sites and engaging people, but also for listeners across the country who might want to also engage with that organization and what it is that they do and how it's kind of benefited the work of getting, you know, different folks out to see places.
So I've worked with Outdoor Afro, I guess it'll be 10 years soon, which is mind-blowing, and we've done a number of events. And so Outdoor Afro's focus is to get African-Americans in position of leadership in the outdoors, and they provide education and training and various events and togetherness. But to me, the most important part is the community that you can build with Outdoor Afro. As a park ranger, I've always thought, I have the resource. You know, I have 90 units, I have access to so many parks and public lands. But one of our biggest issues is getting the word out. But every Outdoor Afro event I do sells out. I've had them sell out in less than an hour. And it allows people with similar interests to come together and have a very amazing, very moving experience in the outdoors and in nature. And so I was able to bring a few groups from Outdoor Afro to Freedman State Historical Park, and some of them live in Montgomery County and nearby, and they had no idea that history was there. And so I really, really enjoy sharing the quieter parts of our African-American and American history with people. And Outdoor Afro has really helped me do that. So I provide the venue and the events, and they provide me with very happy, excited people who are ready to go and hike and camp and experience the outdoors and to also grow in their outdoor experience and their outdoor knowledge. So it's been a very mutually beneficial relationship.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention it because I know it's special to you.
Thank you.
And I think that it's just, it's like reading a landscape. I think it's something that's applicable across the country, and other people can engage with this organization. And we'll put a link in the show notes as well to them.
Please do. Thank you.
Because I think it's just a compelling organization and interesting work. And I think it dovetails nicely with the work that a lot of listeners are doing. So, you know, it's funny here in questions sort of written out, you know, I write out some things so I don't forget things to ask you and topics to bring up, because this could go in so many directions. And I know your time is precious, but, you know, I was going to ask, what are you working on now? But I don't really know how you even ask you how you're doing that, because you're working on so many different things. So maybe I'll rephrase it a little bit and say, what are you most excited about right now?
I think I'm excited about the future of the Maryland Park Service. This organization, the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, has changed my life. It's allowed me to connect to history and natural spaces in a way that I never thought possible. So I love sharing that with people. So just making sure our parks are welcoming and open and available to anybody and everybody that wants to use them is something I'm working on, something I'm very excited about. We also have, we've done 5 town halls across the Maryland Park Service, and we have 2 more just to make sure that I'm open and available to people and give folks updates on Freedman State Historical Park as well as Port of Deposit and where we're going in the future. What else? We have State Parks Week next week, so we will be all over the place, all over the state of Maryland, planting trees, opening trails, and just sharing the good news, again, of the Maryland Park Service and being there for my coworkers and my colleagues and just making sure we're headed in the right direction. So I guess that's a big answer, a big roundabout answer to one question.
Well, folks know that Preservation Maryland powers PreserveCast, so we might be a little partial to Maryland, but I can't think of a better person leading an agency like this than yourself. We are very fortunate here in this state to have somebody who is so thoughtful about making everyone feel welcome in these state parks, and what an amazing canvas to tell a story on.
Yes.
That's been, you know, previous generations did a lot of work to put these parks in place, and telling their story, maintaining them, caring for them, not only is a big job, but it's a job that apparently they're recruiting for right now. Mm-hmm. And so we'll make sure that you know about that.
Yeah.
And take a look at those notes. A lot of times we ask people about a favorite historic place or site, and I feel like that's a tough position to put you in because you're the leader of this. So I'm going to give you 2 options. You can answer that question, or you can tell us the most recent book that you've read if you wanted to share that.
I might do both.
I'll be happy to. It doesn't have to be an and or.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
When I saw that question last night, I did struggle with that. I was like, I can't answer this. So I cooked dinner and cleaned up and moved around and came up with an answer that I think is applicable. So Frederick Douglass Park on Tuckahoe Creek on the eastern shore of Maryland is a site that is near and dear to me. We hosted a Juneteenth celebration there last year, and that's where we welcomed everyone. We had 2 descendants of Frederick Douglass come and talk about their lives and talk about Frederick Douglass. And that park is the closest you can get to where he was born. So he was born on a horseshoe bend of Tuckahoe Creek. But the most moving part of that park for me was walking to the creek with the group. And then we saw a witness tree. So that tree was there during Frederick Douglass's time. And it's kind of in an awkward location. So you had to help people down, but then you also had to help them back up. And people would walk down and sit next to the tree and put their hand on it and look up and then look out at the creek and look around. And I usually like to be the sweeper, so the last person to leave on any hike or any group gathering, so I know everybody is heading in the right direction. And I remember helping people up, and this one woman, I pulled her all the way up. I was holding onto a tree. I grabbed her wrist. She grabbed my wrist, and I pulled her back up. And she turned, and she looked at the tree, and she looked at the creek. And she looked down at her muddy feet and my muddy feet. And she looked at me and she said, "Thank you." And it was the first day of a multi-day event, but I will never forget her face. And she put her hand on my arm and she walked to her vehicle. And that was her introduction, her personal introduction of Frederick Douglass's life. So that tree is very meaningful to me. Like I said, it's in an awkward location, but it is big, it is noticeable, it's gnarly, it's old, it has seen and experienced so much. And so for people to be able to touch an aspect of history like that and helping them do that was very moving for me.
What a perfect symbol, too, for your career, right? Where it's a tree, it's the landscape, it's the story, it's the history, it's a witness tree, it's Frederick Douglass, it's,
yeah.
I mean, we got to bottle that somehow.
Oh, somehow. And it's a gorgeous tree.
All right. I don't know how you're going to outdo this, but what have you read recently?
I'm reading about the life and times of Zilpha Elaw. And so she was an African-American woman. She ended up being a traveling deaconess or preacher. And she was born free in Pennsylvania in the 1700s, which she doesn't highlight much, but her mother had 22 children. Only 3 survived. And yes, which is very heavy. She was separated from her parents very early in life, but she had a religious calling that was just so moving. And she writes about her travels, as she calls them, her peregrinations. And it's just beyond moving to me. And she ends up going to Europe. She speaks on the Eastern Shore, which is how I got the connection to her. She would speak at camp meetings, which were like outdoor religious revivals that enslaved and free people would go to. And so her life has just been so moving for me. We don't write the way she writes. It's beautiful. It takes me a while to get through it. But man, the five pages that I read, so moving and so wonderful. And I always think, you know, if Zilpha can do it, if Harriet Tubman can do it, if Frederick Douglass can do it, I have to get up, put on my uniform and smile and go about this job with the drive that I know is inside of me. And with those people behind me, I know I can push. I know I can move. I know I can go.
There's nothing more to say. That's the perfect way to end this.
You.
And I so appreciate not only you taking the time to be with us, but for all the work that you're doing for the Park Service and for the people of Maryland. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Nick. And again, everyone is welcome to visit our Maryland State Parks and apply and explore and peregrinate all over the state.
All right. Sounds good. We will talk soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to PreserveCast. To dig deeper into this episode's story, head over to preservecast.org for show notes and our collection of previous episodes. Don't forget to engage with this podcast by subscribing, commenting, and leaving a review. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at PreserveCast for even more. PreserveCast is currently recorded in Walkersville, Maryland, and sponsored by the 1772 Foundation and powered by Preservation Maryland. Thanks for listening and keep on preserving.